The last several days I've been explaining to you about the path of karma. Initially I mentioned that there are three paths to God: karma, jnana, and bhakti. And there's no fourth way of attaining God. So we have to understand which is the right path for us out of these three. So we've gone into quite a bit of detail, understanding that the path of karma on its own is incomplete. Because karma means doing good actions, which includes performing Vedic rituals, doing daily Vedic rites, doing occasional naimittik karma, like certain ceremonies that have to be performed at different stages of a person's life, doing prayaschitta karma, doing religious formalities, doing social good works, doing your family duty. All of this comes under this one area of good karma, or the path of karma. What is the outcome of that? The outcome of that is the attainment of swarg, which is temporary, and which does not give the attainment of divine bliss or freedom from maya. Having gone to swarg, you enjoy, and then you come back here and start again. However, that is better than doing vikarma. Everything I explained, all of that is written in the Vedas, like rules that you have to follow. You're either following the rules or you aren't. Those who follow the rules are rewarded by going to swarg or getting a better birth in their next life. And those who don't follow the rules, they're doing vikarma, pap. They're doing bad actions, so there has to be a punishment for bad actions, and that is going to narak, and or getting a bad destiny in your next life, or being born in the lower species. So we see that both karma and vikarma give binding results. Binding meaning, whether you do good actions or bad actions, you're still under maya. You did good actions, you went to swarg. You did bad actions, you went to narak. Once your time elapses in either place, you come back here. Eventually you get another human birth, you do more karma, keep getting the results. So you're caught in this cycle of birth and death, bound to receive the results of your karma. So it means your karma is binding you. Obviously, bad actions bind you because you're bound to receive the punishment of that bad action. But even good actions are considered binding because a good action does not release you from maya. And by performing a good action, you merely get a better destiny or go to the celestial abodes, which keeps you here in this cycle of birth and death. So from that point of view, both good actions and bad actions are considered to be the same. Although it's better to be good than bad, which is why the Vedas teach us to be good, to follow all those rules. But good actions alone do not result in God realization. So then I talked to you about karma yoga and karma sannyas. Karma yoga, I explained, means following all those rules of the Vedas, but instead of having a desire to get more happiness from this world, have a desire to attain God. So instead of desiring the world, you're desiring God. That means your mind is attached in God. He's your desire. So your mind is over there. Whatever you desire, that's where your mind is. This becomes karma yoga. Your mind is in God and you're physically doing good actions in the world. If you're sitting here and wondering what's going on in the NFL playoff game that's on right now, I'm impressed by the number of people that came tonight, by the way. We'll see what happens the weekend of the Super Bowl. Yeah, many times I've thought about, you know, scheduling my speeches around the Super Bowl but there's no way to avoid it. It's like a whole day event. Anyway, if you're sitting here and you're thinking about something else going on somewhere else. Not because I want to watch the Super Bowl, because nobody comes to the mandir on that day. Everybody's home having their Super Bowl party. But if your mind is somewhere else, even if you're sitting in the mandir, it means that's where you are, and that's the result that you're going to get. So if your mind is in God, even if you're performing good actions, those actions are no longer binding. This is Karma Yoga. Following all the do's and don'ts of the Vedas, doing family duties, worshipping formalities, good works in the society, all the daily and occasional requirements set forth by the Vedas, but your only desire is for God realization, so you will attain God because you're thinking of Him all the time. Etavaneva lokesmin punsam nishreyasodaya tivrena bhakti yogena mano mayarpitam sthiram bhagavatam. Kapil Bhagwan is saying to his mother, the highest duty of a human being is to immediately, tivrena, attach his mind in me. He's Bhagwan, he's an avatar of Bhagwan. So he's saying, surrender your mind to me, attach your mind to me quickly, tivrena, through bhakti. Again, I explain, bhakti is simply desiring God. Thinking of God is bhakti. Thinking of God with a desire to attain Him. So karma plus bhakti equals karma yoga. The bhakti part means your mind is in God. The karma part means you're physically doing good actions. So this is karma yoga, and this results in God realization. I also explained to you that karma sannyas, although it physically looks different, physically karma sannyas appears like someone has simply abandoned all the rules and regulations of the Vedas. No family, no involvement in society, no Vedic rituals, no yajna, no nothing. It looks like he's become a vikarmi, but he hasn't. Why? Because his mind is in God all the time. So the karma sannyasi has his mind in God, but is not following all the injunctions, the rules and regulations of the Vedas. So he's not doing good karma, but he is doing bhakti. He's only remembering God. So he also receives the result of his attachment. He's attached to God, so he attains God. It means the karma sannyasi and the karma yogi both attain God, both get freedom from maya. Only their physical actions appear different, which is why Sri Krishna told Arjun, the karma yogi is better, because if someone imitates the actions of the karma yogi, he will at least become a karmi, whereas the one who imitates the actions of a karma sannyasi will become a vikarmi. So from the point of view of the society, being a karma yogi is better. However, from the point of view of your attainment, both are equal. They both give God realization. So with this, we can understand, for instance, back in the beginning of this discussion on karma, I explained to you that at one place the Vedas say, those who follow this path of karma enter into darkness. Andhan tamah pravishanti ye vidyam upasate. They enter into darkness by following the path of karma. And on the other hand, God is saying, Shruti smriti mamaivagye yasto ullanghya vartate. In the Badhul Smriti, Bhagwan says, I made the rules of the Vedas. I made the rules of karma. The one who follows it, that's good. He's a good person. The one who doesn't, he's dveshi. He's my enemy. Yet, you find Shri Krishna in the Gita saying, his last teaching to Arjun, Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami mashucha. Leave all the dharmas, leave all the karma, and just surrender to me. So it seems like a contradiction, but actually you can understand now that where Vedas are saying, by following the path of karma you enter into darkness, it means when you're just doing good karma with attachment in the world and your desire is to get more worldly enjoyment, your mind is not attached to God, you're just doing good karma. Our scriptures explain that that in fact is going to take you into darkness. What is darkness? Maya is darkness. Very simple. God is like the sun, Maya is darkness. So, it's very simple. Yanti devavrata devan pitrin yanti pitrivrata bhutani yanti bhutejya yanti madhyajino pimam. Gita. Wherever your mind is attached, that's what you will attain. So if you're attached in Maya, even if you're doing good actions, you will only attain Maya. You'll perpetuate your Mayic bondage, multiply your worldly attachments, and you'll be reborn in this world accordingly. That is called darkness in our scriptures. Thus, someone who follows the path of karma enters into darkness. That's why also in the Gita, Shri Krishna says, Vedeshu yagyeshu tapah suchaiva daneshu yat punya phalam pradishtam atyeti tat sarvamidam viditva yogi param sthanam upaiti chadyam. He says there's a path of darkness and a path of light. The path of light is very simple. Surrender to God. Attach your mind to God. That's the path of light. Bhakti. The path of darkness, everything else. He says, Vedeshu. Following those teachings related to the path of karma in the Vedas, that's the path of darkness. Why? It keeps your mind attached in Maya, so you're bound to return. Yagyeshu. Doing yajna, it's also the path of darkness. Tap, doing austerities, also the path of darkness. Daneshu, giving charity, also the path of darkness. Keep in mind, when he's saying that, he means when you do good actions without the attachment of your mind in God. Your goal in doing those good actions is to be rewarded with more worldly enjoyment in this life or the next life. That is the path of darkness because your mind is attached in the world. Doing the same good actions simply to please God and remembering God while performing the actions, that is the path of light because now you added bhakti to your good karma. So you have to make that adjustment. If your mind remains attached in the world, you can do millions and billions of good actions, follow all the rules of the Vedas, but you'll only remain bound under Maya. So this is why punya is also considered pap, as I explained yesterday. Both your punya and your pap has to be washed away in order for you to attain God. Punya is also binding because it was performed with attachment. If punya, good actions, are performed without attachment, they're not called punya. They're nothing. They're non-binding. They have no binding effect. And if they're performed with attachment to God, they result in God realization. This is the secret of karma revealed in the Gita. So this is why our Vedas tell us, Tena tyaktena bhunjitha magridha kasya svidhanam. Keep your mind attached in God, but do your physical work in the world, understanding that none of this belongs to you. It's all like on loan. And live your life. That's it. But have your mind attached to God. Treat things in this world like they've been like you've borrowed them. We don't do that. We think, this is my shawl, my necklace, my hair, my body. It's only temporary. My house, my bank account. What if, let's say, you and your, maybe you and your brother invest and buy a big house out in Long Island on the beach, maybe in the Hamptons, a few million dollars worth of property, and you move out there and you're living the good life, living the high life, and you're fixing everything up in your house, making everything just so, the trim is like this, the moldings are like that, the curtains are like this, the pictures are like that, the furniture has to match everything, doing all this fixing up. Then one fine day, you find out that legally there's a little something wrong. Actually, your brother put the whole thing in his name. You don't even own one penny of the house or the property. But he says to you, no, don't worry. It's yours. You live in it. I'm not going to kick you out. You live in it for as long as you want, your whole life if you want. That's fine, but still something has changed in you now. You don't look at the house the same. Oh, ye bhaiya kaya. I'm living in it like living in someone else's house. You're all that enthusiasm is gone. Why? Because now it's not mine. It's borrowed. This is correct. This is how we're supposed to live in this world. It's all borrowed. It's all temporary. So realizing that, you live in the world and keep your mind attached to God, because He is the only permanent thing that you have. This is Karma Yoga. There are two kinds of dharma. Can understand this whole thing, summarize the whole thing by remembering that we have aparadharma and paradharma. Aparadharma, physical duties. And paradharma, how to become surrendered to God. Physical duties, that's the path of karma I've been explaining to you. All the do's and don'ts of the Vedas. Ye sansar ko chalane ke liye hai. It's necessary to have all those rules. If we don't have those rules, how will the world function? It will be mayhem, chaos. But without the paradharma, no one can attain true happiness. So if someone is only following aparadharma, the varnashram dharma, without following paradharma, devotion to God, they can never attain true happiness. They'll only multiply their worldly bondage and attachments. But the one following paradharma also has to live a good life in the world. He can't totally disregard everything. He has to treat others with respect. But he's beyond those rules of aparadharma. As I explained yesterday, the karma yogi, he's not bound by the same rules and he won't be punished for his mistakes in performing Vaidic yagya or Vaidic rituals. Whereas the karmi, because his attachment is in the world, he is held responsible and he's punished for his mistakes if he makes mistakes while doing any such rituals. Savai punsam paro dharmo yato bhakti radho chaje bhagavatam. What is paradharma? Whatever increases your devotion to God is paradharma. That's it. So paradharma means attaching your mind to God, and aparadharma are all the rules and regulations for living in the world. If you look at Prahlad, remember this was one of the examples I gave you, that Prahlad disobeyed, openly disobeyed his father. So here's a great saint, an example in history of a great saint and devotee of God, who is openly disregarding the rules of the Vedas that a child is always supposed to obey his parents. But now you have the knowledge to understand why he did that. Because the rules of paradharma supersede the rules of aparadharma. Obeying your father is aparadharma. That's correct. But what if your father tells you to do something which contradicts the rules of paradharma? Remember, what are the rules of paradharma? Smartavyo satatam Vishnur vismartavyo najatuchit. Two rules. One, do always remember God. One, don't. Never forget God. Two rules in the paradharma, in bhakti. So if someone is, since Prahladji's father was giving him an instruction, ordering him not to do devotion to God, not to worship God, to think of him as God instead of Shri Krishna as Bhagwan. So that contradicted the rules of paradharma. Thus Prahlad was free to in fact disobey. It's kind of like, yes, there's a rule, but there's also a subsection. If, you know, you have to follow this rule, however, in this circumstance, etc., etc., etc. So, the one following paradharma, of which there are very few in the world, how many people actually have as the aim of their life to attain God? Very few people. That's the marker. If someone is trying to attain God in this life and they're following the path of bhakti to do so, then they are following paradharma. Well, there's a very, very tiny percentage of people in the world who are actually following paradharma. But those who are, they enter that subsection of the rule. That subsection is for them, that all these rules of aparadharma apply for as long as, or for as far as, they don't interfere with paradharma. Paradharma is supreme. So that's why Lakshman and Sita also said, "Oh Ram, you're lecturing us on the aparadharma, on the physical dharma, but we're following paradharma, so we're staying with you. That's it." Gopis went to Shri Krishna, leaving their families in the middle of the night, coming out of the house and going to do ras in the middle of the jungle. What is meeting with Shri Krishna? That's the ultimate goal of every soul. I told you. Sanyogo yoga ityukto jivatma paramatmano. Jivatma meeting paramatma. That's what this whole thing is for, remember? Dharmo yasyam madatmakah bhagavatam. Shri Krishna says, dharma is for what? To bring you to me. To bring the souls to me. So, to ignore paradharma in order to keep following the rules of aparadharma, that's wrong. So the gopis were right. When Shri Krishna called, they should go to him. Jivatma meeting paramatma. So you understand that these rules are here. They're only to get a person to a certain height. And to make sure that the world is a harmonious and a harmonious place where people can live peacefully. But they're not the be-all and the end-all. The be-all and the end-all is reaching Shri Krishna. That is the paradharma. That is the desire of every soul. So this is why, as I explained yesterday, mannimit. Tam kritam papam madharmaya chakalpate mamanadritya dharmopi papam syan mat prabhavata. Padma Puran. If you try to follow all the rules of the Vedas so diligently that in order to do so you ignore devotion to God, that becomes pop. As I explained, your mind is still in the world, you're ignoring God and trying to do all the good actions, that's binding. But pop can become punya, like in the gopis' case. They seemingly ignored the rules of the Vedas. However, why did they do so? In order to get to Shri Krishna, in order to meet with Shri Krishna, so that pop becomes punya. And the Brahmins, the example I gave you of the Brahmins, who said, to Shri Krishna's friends, get out of here. We don't care if Kanhaiya is hungry. We're doing a yajna. We have to follow these Vedic rituals. See, they're doing punya and it becomes pop because they're doing it while ignoring God. They forgot the whole reason why that's there. These teachings of karma are important though. As I said, there are very few people in the world who are actually desiring God. They're more desiring to enjoy this world. So for them, that's more like a preliminary level. Vedas say, okay, follow all these rules and you'll get more worldly enjoyment because you'll be rewarded for your good actions. So the person says, oh, I can get this kind of enjoyment. I can go to Swarg. Okay, I'll perform all these good actions. I'll do all this good karma. So what is that? They're not attaining anything ultimate through that. Why is Ved teaching to do that? Because if Ved doesn't teach them to do that, what are they going to do? They're not interested in God realization as of yet. So if Ved doesn't give them incentive to perform good actions, they'll just perform bad actions in order to try to fulfill their worldly desires. So that's why at the lowest level you have people ignoring the rules of the Vedas and simply trying to get more worldly pleasure with total disregard for their health or the well-being of others. At a higher level than that, you have those who still aren't desiring God, they only want this world, but at least they're willing to make the effort to do good actions in order to get more rewards in the form of worldly enjoyments. And the next level above that is the one who understands that even through good actions, we can't find divine happiness. There's no divine happiness in this world. So they understand they have to do bhakti. So they do bhakti, but they continue to live in the world, performing all the same good actions, but with no intention of receiving any kind of reward for it. They're just doing it because it's their nature. One who has his mind attached to God is purifying his mind, so his nature, the goodness in him, is improving. So he just does those good actions because it's his nature. And then you have the karma sannyasi, who is now away from all worldly involvement and only spends all of his time remembering God. Both result in God realization. Karma yoga, karma sannyas. Now, there's one more question regarding this doing bhakti to God, doing devotion, or doing good karma. It is said, Rinani trinya pakrit mano mokche niveshayet manusmriti. Here there are three rina mentioned. Rina means debts, a debt, you know, like you borrowed money from someone, now you owe them something. So here manusmriti is saying everyone has three debts. In fact, this is a sankshep mein, sometimes it's also explained to be five debts. Those five debts are Devarina, our debt to the celestial gods, not to Bhagwan, to the celestial gods. Rishirin, our debt to the saints and rishis who produced all of this knowledge on the earth planet for us. Bhutarin, bhut doesn't always mean ghost. Many times in Sanskrit it means a living being. So bhutrin means the debt we owe the other living beings on this earth planet. Nirin. Niri means human beings, the debt we owe to other human beings. And Pitririn, the debt we owe to our ancestors. These five debts must be paid. Only after that a person could be qualified for liberation, to be liberated from Maya. So, how are these debts paid? By following the path of karma. How do you pay this debt that you owe to the devatas, your devarin? By doing Vedic yagya. When you do yagya, you're making offerings to the devatas. So you're paying off your debt to them. How do you pay off the debt to the rishis? By studying the Vedas, which is also part of the path of karma. How do you pay off the debt to other living beings on this earth planet? By giving charity. How do you pay off the debt to the other human beings on this earth planet? Actually, when you're a grihasthi and you have a home, you welcome a visitor into your home, you're paying off the debt to other human beings that you owe. And how do you pay off the debt to the pitris, your pitririn, your ancestors? By doing tarpan, for one, there are certain daily ceremonies that are performed, and also by raising children of your own. So all of these debts are paid off by following the path of karma. And here we're being told, oh no, it's okay, you don't have to do all of that if you're following the path of bhakti. Remember, it's the subsection. But then how will we get liberated from Maya? Oh no, there's a loophole in this case. Devarshi bhutapta nrinam pitrinam nakin karo nayam rini charajan sarvatmanaya sharanam sharanyam gato mukundam parihritya kartam. The one who is following bhakti, he's attaching his mind to God with a singular desire to attain God in this life, and following the path of bhakti, he is freed from those five debts automatically. So that's the subsection in the law. Thus, the one who's following the path of bhakti does not have to supplement it with certain practices of the path of karma out of fear that, oh, but what about my pitririn? What about my bhutrin? What about my nririn? Etc., etc. He doesn't have to worry about that. He's doing bhakti. He's already satisfied all of those debts. Because devarin, think about it. Those devatas, who are they? They're employees of Shri Krishna. Yatha taror mulani shechanena tripyanti tatskandha bhujopashakha. Bhagavatam. Vedavyasji says, you have a tree. You want to keep that tree alive by watering it. The tree has roots, trunk, branches, twigs, leaves, flowers, fruit maybe. Now, if you go and sprinkle water on all the leaves, trying to keep the leaves from shriveling up, but you don't pour water on the root, the whole tree is going to die. But if you ignore the leaves and simply pour water on the root, the whole tree will prosper. Shri Krishna is the root. He's the mool of everything. All the devatas receive life from Shri Krishna. They receive their power from Shri Krishna. So if you ignore Shri Krishna and do puja to the devatas, your tree is going to shrivel up. In other words, you're not going to attain anything divine. If you ignore the devatas, in other words, forget about sprinkling water on the leaves, and you just do bhakti to Shri Krishna, in other words, you're pouring water directly on the root, look at the leaves, look at how they glow and they're so happy. The devatas are very happy. They consider that debt you owe to them already fulfilled 100-fold if you do bhakti to Shri Krishna. Same thing with your ancestors. By doing bhakti, you're giving your ancestors much more than you could ever give them by through the path of karma, trying to fulfill that debt to them. Same thing with the rishis. What do the rishis want? They want you to meet Shri Krishna. So they're more than happy. They consider your debt fulfilled 100 times over if you do bhakti to Shri Krishna. Same thing with bhutarin, same thing with nirin. The best thing you can do for this world is to make yourself purify your own mind. Because then you become a better person and you'll naturally be doing better actions in this world. And you'll also encourage others to follow the path of bhakti and attain true happiness, which is the greatest charity you could do, giving someone divine happiness. Thus, the one following the path of bhakti does not need to lean on in any way this path of karma for any reason. That's why Shri Krishna says, dharman santyajya yah sarvan mam bhajet sacha sattamah. He says, the greatest devotee is the one who leaves all of those practices of karma and just mam bhajet. He just worships me. Sacha sattamah. He's the highest of all devotees. So now you understand that on one hand, Shri Krishna is saying, you're my enemy if you don't follow the laws I laid down in the Vedas. But on the other hand, he's saying, however, there's a subsection to that law. If you're following the path of bhakti for God realization in this life, then you're free not to follow all those do's and don'ts of the path of karma. And in fact, I consider you to be a higher devotee if you do leave all of those other practices of the path of karma. Meaning all the Vedic formalities. He's saying, forget all the Vedic formalities, just do pure bhakti. That's the highest devotee. One more question. It is said that by following the path of karma, paap ka naash hota hai. Your sins are deleted. Remember I explained about prayashchitta karma, which is part of the path of karma, where you absolve yourself from your sins that you've committed in this life by doing certain actions that are prescribed in the Vedas, called penance, prayashchitta. So without that, how will we purify our heart? Bhagavatam says, purify your heart? Karma can't fully purify your heart. Dharma satyadayo peto vidyava tapasanvita madbhaktya petamatmanam nasamyak prapunatihi. Prapunati means clean. Samyak, completely cleaning the heart. He says only bhakti can do that. Mad bhaktya, only through my bhakti can someone fully purify their heart. Dharma, satya dayo, it means following all the rules of karma with truthfulness and with daya, with a feeling of mercy and kindness, compassion towards other living beings. He says that's the highest form of dharma, and even that is powerless to fully purify your heart. Only bhakti can fully purify it. In the very next shloka, he says, katham vinaro maharsham dravata va cetasa vina vinanandashru kalaya shuddhed bhaktya vinashayah. Shri Krishna is telling Uddhava this, that how could it be possible for someone to purify their heart unless they think of me, and while thinking of me, they get romaharsh. The hairs stand up on their neck, on their body. They get that excitement. Dravatava chetasa. Their heart melts when they think of me. and tears come. That melting of the heart, those tears and longing for Krishna, that is the only thing with the power to fully purify your heart. Shuddhayati hinantaratma Krishna padam bhoja bhakti mrite. Prabodh Sudhakar, even Shankaracharya says that no one can fully purify their heart without devotion to the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agham dhunvanti kartsnyena niharamiva bhaskara. Bhagavatam. Bhakti is so powerful, that bhakti, Shri Krishna just said, when your heart melts for him, when you cry tears for him, that bhakti is so powerful that it can just make sins go bhasma. It vaporizes your sins. Like a morning mist in the summer, when the sun rises, what happens? That those droplets of the mist, they just evaporate. In the same way, bhakti has the power to devour all of your sins and eliminate them. But no other path, no other way has that power that bhakti does. Thus, you see that bhakti is the sar. Karma without bhakti keeps you under the bondage of maya. Only by adding devotion to God can you attain God. Then it becomes karma yoga. That is a path to God. So although we say there are three paths to God, karma, jnana, and bhakti, however, karma on its own cannot take you to God. You have to add bhakti into it. Then when it becomes karma yoga, it can take you to God, otherwise not. It means the path of karma is dependent on bhakti. What about path number two, the path of jnana? There's a lot said about jnana in this world and in our scriptures. And just like there were many contradictions about the path of karma that we found in the different statements of our scriptures, you find the same thing with the path of jnana. On one hand, you have Vedas saying, Vijnana sarathiryastu manah pragrahavan nara sodhvana paramapnoti tad vishno paramampadam. Kathopanishad. Only when you get correct knowledge can you attain God. Knowledge, jnana. So it's praise for the path of jnana. Tameva vidittvati mrityumeti nanya pantha vidyate yanaya Shvetashvatarupanishad. Only by knowing God can you cross this ocean of maya and be free from birth and death forever. Only by knowing him. Gyanse. Praise for the path of gyan. Gita says, Jnani tvatmaiva me matam. Shri Krishna says, the jnani is like my own soul. He's so dear to me. Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam veti tatvatah. Out of thousands of people, rarely someone thinks of trying to know me. And out of all of those people, it's very rare for someone to succeed after thousands of lifetimes in actually knowing me. More praise for jnana by Shri Krishna. Nahi jnanena sadrisham pavit. There is nothing as purifying as jnana, Gita. Ved also says, jnana deva hi kaivalyam. Actually, that's Sankhya darshan. Sankhya Darshan says that only through Gyan can you get liberation. Ved says, Rite Gyanan na Muktihi. Without Gyan, you can never get liberation. The Ramayana also says, Gyani Prabhuhi Vishesh Piyara. The Gyani is particularly dear to Bhagwan Ram. Yet, you also find criticism for Gyan in the very same scriptures. Again, from Ishavasya Upanishad, Andhan Tamah Pravishanti Ye Vidyamupasate Tato Bhuya Ivate Tamo Ya'u Vidyaya Gvam Ratah. The one who follows the path of Gyan enters into darkness, just like the one who follows the path of Karma. Look in Ramayana. First Gita. Gita says, Ishvaro hamaham. Ishvaro hamaham bhogi, siddhoham balavan sukhi. Shri Krishna says, the one who considers himself to be God, Asurim yonimapannad, Murha janmani janmani. On the path of Gyan, they meditate thinking, I am God. Main Brahma hu, aham brahmasmi. Shri Krishna says, the one who considers himself to be God is mur. He's a fool, an idiot. And he's going to be sent in the lower species for many, many lifetimes. Come back to the Ramayana. Ramayana, on the one hand, Prabhuhi, Gyani Prabhuhi Vishesha Piyara. Look at another statement of Tulsidas ji. Te jada kamadhenu grihatyagi khojat aku phirahi payalagi. Jada means, again, a stupid person. Put it that way. This is so dumb. How dumb? He has Kamadhenu at his own house, the celestial cow, leaving her there, leaving her tied up at his house. He wanders out in the desert looking for the milkweed plant, which has a poisonous sap which looks like milk. What kind of a fool would do that? Tulsidas ji says, the Gyani who hopes to attain God without bhakti is such a fool. But the language goes on getting more and more strong. Te shat maha sindhu bina tarani peri par chahahi jad karani. Now he says, such a Gyani is shat. He's a wicked person. But he doesn't stop there. Gyanavant api so nar. He says, bhale hi o gyani ho. He may have gyan, but if he tries to attain Bhagwan without bhakti, pashubinu punch vishan. He's like an animal without horns or a tail. So it's like an argument. You know, the more heated the argument gets, the worse and worse the language gets. So Tulsidas is getting more and more angry with these Gyanis, it seems. So why do we have such contradictory statements about the path of Gyan in our scriptures? You can come back tomorrow and find out. Boliye Vrindavan Bihari Lal Ki Jai.